Always the best.
I know. It's, yeah, exactly.
Gents, thanks for joining me back on the podcast. Peter, I'm a bit disappointed you've not come with like the cardigan and scarf that you've come down with a sweater. Oh, the scarf!
No!
It's straight on.
Couldn't come unprepared for the British connection across the pond.
Can I just interject and say that before Bromka jumped on the call, Marcus was giving you a little bit of a hard time about it. So this is actually quite funny for me to watch.
I mean, I don't know what I was thinking in 2023, 2024, that like a podcast that you could just roll up to podcasts, you know, looking like two pennies rubbed together and just like, hopefully your voice isn't too scratchy. And then, I mean, I knew this was happening. Like they slice and dice some reels on the back end, and all of a sudden I'm like, why did I wear that to that podcast? why didn't I wash my face before I decided to be on a video that was, you know, sent around the world? So I'm trying a little harder.
It sounds to me like the answer is don't even look at Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably the better way to live. Yeah, it's where our team makes fun of each other. So it keeps it fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to see you guys again. And I was realizing it's the 15th, so we're a month out.
Yeah, we're getting a lot closer.
4.5 weeks.
And for
how
context,
you feeling, Marcus?
Right, I feel good, but like for context, though, I do the stuff I've said about Bromka, I said to him direct as well. I mean, I do like the fact that he brings that certain je ne sais quoi to podcasting world now, Twitter. This is making me need to think about raising my own fashion game, Twitter.
It's going to be hilarious. Yeah, it makes it more fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So to answer your question, do you know what? In the last probably week or so, I've started to feel like more like myself with my running. I'm not really focusing like too much on the speed and what that means, but do you know when you sort of feel like you're in a nice rhythm, and that's been a nice place to be in, because I've been trying to find fitness in this block, which is obviously quite challenging when you've sort of had some time out. And first of all, problems, because obviously I've done the 2 times sub 3 in a week. I've kind of put a target on my back, and I was like, are you going to run sub 3 twice again? I'm like, they make it seem like you're just going to go for a casual jog. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try my best, but yeah, we'll see how it goes.
I mean,
so
I
for
think
people,
you're,
not, from, for
you're
people not familiar, Marcus, oh, yeah. What are you trying to do? Sorry, just quickly before Bromka jumps in with the double.
So yeah, last year when I ran Boston, London, I ran in both sub 3. So the aim is to do it again. I'm going to run Boston as my fastest one. I'm going to go for that one and then trying to hold on for London, basically. Because what happened was I got to halfway in London feeling good, and then legs were like, hey, remember, you ran a marathon a couple days ago. But actually, after watching like the Lululemon event, I kind of feel like kind of pathetic complaining about running a marathon with like a couple of days apart. So I'm going to say nothing after watching Camille absolutely smash it.
Yeah. I mean, the percentage of effort, it matters and it catches up to you. You know, like I will say when Tommy runs, our colleague on Relay, put together a 3 flat and a 301, I was like, I mean, good running, but I would take Marcus's 2 sub 3s, you know? So these things are all made up, but they also kind of like work their way into it. It made me appreciate what you did last.
Yeah, no, it's something, yeah, definitely to be proud of. But how about you guys? How are you getting on, Peter? How's your training going?
Yeah, it's going along. I got sick a handful of times, so really lost some weeks repeatedly and more frustration. But again, starting to find a rhythm and looking forward to, like, had a good long run last weekend that was just like, let's just get out there. And it was hailing and it was windy. And I was like, let's just practice being out here again for a good period of time and taking in the gels and, you know, that routine. I think, like you're saying, we try to divorce ourselves from the numbers on the watch, but because that's ultimately what will be important on race day, it's hard not to get caught up in, you know, oh, I'd love to see this number and not this number. Honestly, it's been a period for me to relearn sort of the layers of that pyramid that you put together in training. If you come into training, if you come into the 12 weeks fit and you can already hammer, you know, handle the length of a long run and the nutrition, and it's just all these skills that layer on each other. And I realized, like, really fine tuning the pace. Yes, it is throughout, but like if you're shooting for a pace like I used to be, it's like the final kind of tool that goes on top of you're like, oh yeah, 2.5 hour run, 3 hour run, no problem. You know, fueling, no problem. Surging and recovering at like a pretty decent pace, no problem. Those are all nice things to have. And I realized, oh, my fitness has faded over the last half year and I'm having to rebuild some of those skills, and that's okay. But it's a good reminder of when you're cooking with heat, you're like, oh, this is easy. This is fun. And so let's just say it's been a new era for me. I have an athlete who said it'll be like race day you'll be able to go in with so much discovery, you know, so much eyes wide and see how it goes. And I'm like, wow, you know, thank you for that. That's probably a good point. Feeling good. I'd say like no one wants to hear a marathoner gripe about like the training they missed. But so like let's focus on what's ahead of us.
Yeah.
I have a quick question for you. You're very much, at least when I got to know you, you know, well, know of you maybe 5-6 years ago, you were very driven towards chasing a time goal, trying to go for that standard for the previous Olympic cycle to try to qualify for the trials. And as a result of creating that goal, you got yourself to run 2:19 very low. Do you go into Boston now with a goal, or are you going in to have fun? Are you going in to enjoy it? Where's your head at with it?
It's a good question. And I haven't finished my answer. I'm actually working on a piece about, did I reference this last time? About how in the early stages of last year's Boston, I realized like, oh, wow. Oh no, I don't have anything to prove to myself. Like I have raced the Boston. I mean, particularly back in the day, I raced it with like so much conviction. And it's like, there's a lot in there in terms of, I saw an athlete who's been around the block post recently, you know, I'm getting back to training, but I try to remember that I am enough regardless of, you know, regardless of how my training goes. And I'm like, oh shit, we'll see how well that works for her. Because I'm not saying it's like mentally that stable, but when you go in and you're like, I don't know if I'm enough and I want to prove to myself that I am capable of doing things I'm not sure I can do, it can be really powerful, probably both ways. It could like go really well, go really poorly. I do think we should all aspire to a mental fortitude to know that like our loved ones love us. And, you know, people aren't going to turn their backs on us if we blow up by any means, or even if we give in and just say like, I couldn't do it today. That said, I've been focusing on this idea of like redefining our runner identity and like proving to ourselves, like, I think I'm capable of this. And damn it, if I'm not going to do everything in my power today to achieve that. And what I witnessed last year in Boston was I was surrounded by men who were doing that. And I'm like, oh, I remember that. Oh, and like enough people know me in the Boston race, like in that zone, that they're like, come on, bro, go, let's go. And I'm like, oh, you go, like you're having a good one. And, you know,
see you at the
like,
end.
I'll catch you right at the finish. And like Marcus, our mutual friend, Tyler, mutual acquaintance, you know, he ran 2:27. This younger guy, I won't call him a kid, but he's a younger man than me, said like, I've read all your essays and like, I've studied the course from you and I think I can break 2:30 today. And sure enough, like he went out, I think he was in a corral behind me, and then he caught me past halfway and he's like, let's go. And other guys had been like, let's go. And I'm like, you go. So this year I'm trying to figure it out, and we can get it to the course a little bit. I have been describing that there's three ways I break down the course. There's the survivalist, which is like run 21 miles and then try to like use the downhill and finish up the last five. That's if you're like really not sure how today's going to go. There's the standard, which is like get to 16, like very in control. And then the last 10 miles is just like the most fun roller coaster. It's down, it's up, it's down, it's flat, it's up, it's over and over. It's like, I think it is some of the most fun racing in a marathon. You know, obviously with the combination of the crowds are going nuts, the history of it all, and just the undulations make it constantly, both the positive is it's exciting. The negative is it's exhausting. And I think people, you see that in the final miles, is their, yes, their quads are sore. We can get to that. But they're like mentally just tired of having to assess and assess and assess and speed up and slow down. Like it's just very different than a flat marathon. And then then we can get into it. I call it like the advanced. I wrote an article about this years ago. Like if you truly have all your tools, if like you're coming into this with all your gears, then it is like about 5 miles of rolling downhill, about 10 miles of rolling flat, but pretty flat. And then this series, I called it 3 times 1 mile easy, 2 miles hard. So it's like kind of a marathon workout of like from 15 to 16 ish, like you go down a hill. And so you're like, okay, that's pretty easy. Run within yourself. Then it's 2 miles of rolling up. Then there's like a flat mile. Then it's 2 miles of rolling up. Then there's a downhill mile coming off of 21. And then we can talk about it, but like those later miles, mile 22 and 23 are god awful. It's called the haunted mile, mile 22, which is, it goes by a cemetery. And then it goes by a reservoir. It's called the haunted mile though, also because you've just crested heartbreak. You've then come off of heartbreak. You've gone through Boston College and they're going nuts. And then because of how fans can't really get along the course, it's just very quiet. And it's mile 21 and a half. And your body's like, Like it's a little bit uphill. I'm sure on the course map it says like up, you know, 0.5 or 1%. And you're just like, oh dear. Like, oh dear. And so people, they say that a lot of professional races have fallen apart at like 21 to 22, because guys are like, I'm charging off the hill. I'm going to win this race. And then it's like, oh no. So yeah, I break it down as like, I think I'm fitter than just to survive. But I recall last year turning at 16 and being like, oh man, I kind of wish I'd set it up to like be excited and charging right here, which you could always say in a marathon, but it's particularly true at Boston where there's just there's uphills, downhills, you know, flats. You just like, there's tangents. Like you can race it in a way that other races are like, I don't know. You like, just go.
Do you know what? You've basically done the whole podcast. We don't need to. No, I'm joking. But like, is there like a middle ground between like the second and the third? Like if you're feeling brave, but you're not feeling brave, like you're thinking I'm advanced, is there like a middle ground?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this last time, like downhill running, uphill running. I called it like that there were 6 moments of decision making in the advanced, but also like really for anyone, you know, the start. I think everyone's start is a little different. Those of us towards the front have a little more room to move. I've definitely, years ago, I was in the back, and I've been impressing upon people, like, try not to be stressed out about how packed the road is early. Just spot yourself some seconds in those first mile or two. It's pretty downhill to start, as you know, and if you get too caught up, I've seen people trip and fall. I've seen people off in the kind of on the side of the road in the dirt, like scooting by, and you're like, okay, but if you just come right back in and then there's more traffic, then you're like, what was I just doing there, you know? So basically the 6 moments are like at the start, okay, what's your mindset there? Then at mile 5, saying, okay, the next 10 miles are pretty flat, so that's where I've encouraged people to check in with what is my range, you know, what's my sort of like slow, medium, fast marathon pace that I'm, if you're going to be checking your watch, like, what do you want to be seeing? What can you see? You know, I think a lot of people talk about this, like you got to have a range where you're like, you might see something underneath that and you can hit one, but let's not hit 2 or 3 in a row there. Then at mile 16.
Can I just stop you there? Yeah. Want to progress. I want to go through these bits because there's so much in there.
Okay.
I just want to go back to the start. Like you said, the first few miles, you're so right because it's so busy. And you feel like you're just in this train. And like if you try to deviate or you pull up or you stop, you feel like there's like definitely a trip moment. So I remember looking at a photo of me last year and it was so, so busy. It looks crazy.
And also, I'm reminded that most of the people at Boston are used to being at the front of races. Like maybe not the front. And you guys have raced like Valencia. I've never raced Valencia. That sounds pretty packed, full of good runners. But most races, people are like, what are you guys doing around me? Like, I'm the guy. or even if you're used to being maybe not winning the race, you're like, I'm a BQer. I'm used to running in space. And so it's like, yeah, you take all those people and pack them together. And my understanding is it's pretty packed. You know, you go back, you're like, I'm a 320 marathoner. I'm used to pulling away from the majority of people. And you're like, oh no, we've stacked you with 1,000 other 320 marathoners.
True. Yeah. You come up with your red bib thinking, yeah, I'm the woman, I'm the guy, oh, I'm the person, right? And then it's like, then you meet 1,000 other people who say exactly the same thing. Okay. Damn.
I'm not sure how much people, I get like a mixed reading from people on like, your bib is really your seed in the whole field. And I found people at the front of the race, like we know it and we just go at each other. You know, it's just like you check a guy's bib and you're like, oh, I'm going to take that guy down. You know, like it's like we work together, there's packs, like, but, you know, particularly in the last 5 miles, you're like, anyone I can catch, I'm going to try to catch. And you see a pro like walking on the course and you're like, oh, picked him off, you know, like give it to me. I'll take it.
That must be an awesome feeling.
Yeah. Although it's like pretty rough when you're like, I really want to walk. And then you just see like, and then also the women's pro field starts ahead of us. And so you'll be like, sometimes like some of those curves through from like 16, 17, 18, 19, like you're coming around a curve and it's almost blind. And then there'll be an athlete like stopping and walking and you're like, whoa, I've had to like kind of jump around someone. So like you have to be heads up. I know that people talk about going up Heartbreak and the, you know, just kind of head down and the person following someone and then that person will stop and walk and you're like, and you almost run into them. So you do have to stay. I think, again, it's exhausting in this subtly like grinding way. But to Marcus, your point, I just think people should be looking around being like, I'm seated around people who ran marathons to qualify similar to me. And I want to race. It's not just me versus all of them, but like, I want to be aware of how do I want to set myself up to like finish well and be, do I want to be passing or being passed in that second half or in that final quarter? So yeah, I think those first couple of miles are fun and all. There are some little uphills in those first 5 miles, which kind of throws people off. Like, and you know, you just flow over them. But it takes a lot of mental, this is like assuming the weather is all right. This is assuming, you know, did I tell the story though? Like my friend straight off the start, a guy went down in front of him. He tripped over him and he smashed his elbow into the ground. And so he looks up. It's like step three of the Boston Marathon. He's bleeding. Like, we do not want that for anyone.
So true. So
it can happen.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen that happen in other races as well, and it can happen anywhere. But I think I have oftentimes wondered the same things at the starts of races, why some particular people, when they can tell, they're probably not in the right zone. So that's a very normal thing. But Bromka, I would love to ask you a couple of questions because I know you coach a bunch of athletes. I'm helping out Marcus. Yeah, we've got 4.5 weeks to go now. So it's sort of like, you know, you could say you're in the critical period of training. I've always sort of thought that the 2 weeks to go to 8 weeks to go, that block of 6 weeks is where, you know, if you nail that, you know, then it's just sort of down to luck and getting the day right. We've got a 22-mile run planned this weekend and then a half marathon the following weekend. This weekend's 22-miler is a progressive one. And we've been talking, Marcus and I have been talking about how to add those, you know, the hills into it to make sure it's sort of more specific to the Boston Marathon course. We touched on this a little bit last week, but like not that much. And then the half marathon race coming up the next weekend. Marcus, I'm actually not super clear if the Brentwood half is hilly or not. We haven't really spoken about that, but I'm more talking to just the next few weeks, making sure that those longer, harder efforts are up and down hills and just sort of hearing Bromka's take on that and how he's approaching it himself.
Yeah. So the Brentwood is a flat one, but I would be curious to hear like what Peter's thoughts are would be for this weekend's run with the 22 mile and like how to approach those 5 mile blocks and in terms of like profile, hilly, flat, like what your thoughts would be for that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we touched on this. I'm a big fan of just trying to it's like a process of dialing it in, but then letting it go. So it's like, okay, finding a course where I think at the end of the day, we want to practice speeding up and slowing down just ever so slightly. So if you were to be progressing, I think it needs to be totally fine that, you know, you turn the corner and you're like, ooh, this is an uphill. And I think we sometimes even worry with virtual coaching, like, well, how will this look to my coach? Or will it be translatable via Strava? We got to let that go because you're working on the skills you'll need in Boston. And so I think I mentioned last time, a rolling 3.5 mile loop that we do here in Oregon, Portland, quite a bit. And that just forces you to constantly be like, all right, I mean, this one, it's a marathon pace mile, but I'm going uphill. Or now it's a marathon pace mile and it's downhill, and I'm going to try to do it smoothly. So yeah, really that, I often say, tell the people, probably too late in the game in those final weeks, like the real skill of Boston is, can you turn that dial 3 to 5 seconds up and down? Like, do you feel, can you soften? I find the softening, the slowing down 3 to 4 seconds a mile, is difficult to do mostly because of ego. You're like, oh, I'd like to end. And we all know that feeling about when you're like, I feel good, this is my marathon pace, and your body's like, like a little slower would be nice. Like, and
yeah.
The beauty of Boston is, and the reason I love it is because, like we talked about, there's always more racing to do. You like rarely finish those final miles as your fastest miles. So I'm totally on board. Like Matt, you mentioned, I spent years like dialing a pace and being like, I had done Boston many times. I had done flat marathons and I was like, okay, I've graduated into like, you're just going to stare at the 5:18. And if you see a 5:20, like it's unacceptable, you know? Maybe it's like one or two is okay, but it's tough. And that's a certain type of racing and it doesn't really lend itself to Boston racing. And so Boston's quite different. And I think that's what makes it more fun, more back and forth, you know, like the flat marathon, you can try to work together, but really like if one guy's threshold is a little bit higher, like he should go, you know, and it becomes this like, so yeah, I would say for the training, I gave an athlete this week multiple times, 3 minutes, then right break and 6 minutes. Cause I wanted him like switching between these kind of similar pace efforts. It's just like annoyingly similar, but different. I'm like, that's how Boston feels.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really good way to describe it really. And even going back to the point you made before, one thing I did remember about Boston was that it never really felt that even you're close to the front, that you're ever really alone. Like there's always a pack around you of runners of your ability or faster. Whereas I feel like in Valencia, it definitely felt like that. But then after probably 10K, it opened up a lot more. So there's definitely like that to think about. And just like, I never really felt like I could settle.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
And that's hard. Yeah.
And it throws out your rhythm as well. Cause you're trying to like sometimes go on and you've had the same thing where people recognize you like, go on, Bronca. And sometimes you're like, I'm not sure if you're being encouraging or you're just trying to like,
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's hard because I do think I've definitely benefited from running with packs in Boston. I've been fortunate that I just know a lot of people in the zone I'm in. So over the years I've been like, all right, I'm going to, and it's, so I would encourage people to not be like maneuvering for 26 miles, you know, like picking it up, slowing down, like try to find packs to work with. I had a newbie who's never run Boston asked like, are there pace groups with the flag and things? And I was like, well, no, but because you're seated based on your qualifying time, some people are less fit or more fit than their qualifying time. But yeah, you know, Marcus, were you able to find, like you were right around 3 hours, you know, like was there like a group of people that said like, we are running 3 hours? Was there any chatter about that? How did that work?
Not really. Wow. I didn't really find a group of people that I was within. I think at the start it was very busy and you've got those people that are just zooming past you or like pulling back. So I never really found a pack. But I think saying that actually, you do actually find the pack that is like the unspoken words and you kind of group together because you know like you're generally in the same pace and you're kind of working together. So you do kind of find that naturally. And I just try to go with how I'm feeling as opposed to trying to keep up with someone or slow down with someone type thing. And it does change. And I just felt like you're almost like your dance partner kept changing through Boston. But I didn't have anyone particularly to work with. Saying that, one of my guys that I know really well, CJ, I remember running with him the first mile And he's like, I'm going to take it easy. And then he turned around to me and went, no, I'm going to pick it up now. And I just didn't say straight to the end. So yeah. I was like, you do your thing, bro. And I'll see you at the end. So yeah, it was all good.
It's a lot of yo-yoing. I've had the benefit several years of having a teammate who I've trained with be there. This hasn't been the case for the last two, which I guess unsurprisingly have been less like mentally enjoyable for me. It's been less easy for me to know, like, okay, where am I? There's that you constantly are trying to reinforce yourself, like you're okay, and your body's like, we're not okay. We are running a marathon. This is alarming, and you're like, it's okay.
This week's episode is brought to you by Pillar Performance. Pillar is a sports micronutrition company. I'm currently testing out the following products. Triple magnesium, I take that approximately an hour before going to bed. This product basically helps relieve sleeplessness and optimizes your sleep cycles. With the citrate and the chelated magnesiums will help iron out any muscle aches, pains, cramps during the training. I'm also using the Ultra B Active, which I take in the morning with breakfast. This is basically a multivitamin, and they use like a high strength dose of activated B vitamins, which help energy production by promoting metabolism of your fats, carbs, and proteins consumed. Then I'm also using the Ultra C, which I take at any time of day, one time. It's not really time sensitive, but I normally have it in the morning with breakfast, and this basically helps with my immune system, keeps it strong, and avoid the feelings of being run down due to high stress loads from training, work, and all that kind of madness. If you really want to find out more, go online and type in pillarperformance.shop and you can get 15% off your first time purchase using the code Marcus. Okay, with that being said, let's head back to the episode.
Having someone around you that you trust is also a sane actor is beneficial. So I wrote about the first time I broke 230 in the marathon was at Boston 2016. And I wrote about how like I really was trying to settle behind this pack. And I found myself constantly just ever so slightly going to the side and then ended up drifting towards the front. And that to me was a good sign. Like the second time it happened that I probably, the pace was coming to me. It wasn't like I was forcing it. You know, when you're chopping your stride, that's a negative thing. You know, you want to be running fluidly. But if I revisit the writing I've done about the race, there's several times where I'm like, man, it took me 3 miles to find like my rhythm. Let's not just like artificially settle in behind someone and assume that they're going to do a good job. But yeah, you, right off the start, you're reminding me, you know, you see the guys who see a lane and they just take off and you're like, okay. And then you see the people who go, you'll hear people going, you sure this feels slow? You know, like checking in with each other. There's always like when you hit the 1 mile mark, which is a crazy downhill, uphill, downhill 1 mile, there's a lot of freaking out because like it's the first time they're like checking in with how they felt measures by the watch. It's just different than a flat marathon where you're like, yeah, I know roughly where I am. So yeah, I would encourage people to try to find a way to settle, particularly after 5 miles. Like usually it's open up enough and then it's flat and you're like from at 10K, there's a big town set, like a small town center, but there's a train stop there. There's a lot of fans lined up. And so you've gone, you know, from you've had about a one flat mile, and that's a good chance to be like, how am I feeling really? And this is still only mile six. You know, I want to be finding that rhythm, which is a different rhythm than your downhill miles.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys, I can't help but notice that we have spoken about the race itself for probably like an hour and a half now. But what I reckon people would like to hear about, and Bronco, you would be the man to answer this, is what are the days like look like before it, like the expo, the vibes, different shakeout runs. I mean, you know, I remember some of your stories. I don't like vaguely. I definitely do remember your story from the after Boston Marathon last year when you were like, I went out a little bit hot. But I remember these pieces. So, what are people going to expect from rolling in on, say, you know, the Friday or the Saturday? And what I mean, it might be different this year, but what was it like in previous years?
It's a great question. It's a very good question because I'll take it outside myself for a moment. I know the Boston area. I went to college in the Boston area. I have the benefit of actually even staying with some college friends. So I get outside the hysteria a little bit. I have spoken with people, and one man actually sent, a lot of people send me their written race reports, sort of like, here's my blog. I know you like this kind of stuff. I'm like, oh, thanks. And this man sent me one where he was admitting he was pretty exhausted by the gun. He like And I was like, oh, whoa, I can see what you're saying. Like, by the time he had qualified for the Boston Marathon, got there, landed, got the bib pickup. I mean, I have like almost been in tears picking up my bib 1 year, like when I was just like, this is so exciting. You know, you're going through the expo. There's year over year, there's more pop-ups. There's more stuff happening. Newberry Street is the street like a block away, two blocks away from the expo, where all the brands, many new niche brands, there's a million things you might want to do. There's panels, there's, we'll have to, Marcus, I'm sure you'll be sharing some of these. You're speaking on the stage on Saturday morning, I believe.
Yeah.
So what I tell people to do is like really try to let themselves have fun on Saturday and really try to put their feet up on Sunday, because the 10 a.m. start with the bus. I mean, many people will take like a Lyft or an Uber to downtown Monday morning, then get on a bus, then have to walk, then have to sit in an athlete's village, then have to walk, and then they fire the gun. And you're like, you can be exhausted by the start if you're not careful. And I think that's where more and more I'm hearing people say, should I try to run fast or should I just enjoy it? And I'm like, well, the two could go together, but I hear what you're saying, which is like, I don't want to get out over my skis, like just... They don't want to like live like a monk and miss the Boston Marathon revelry. And they also don't want to just get out there and be like, oh no, I'm exhausted at mile four and have to walk and feel like they didn't honor, you know, their preparation. So Marcus, curious to your thoughts. You come in typically like on Friday. That means like Saturday, the shakeout has become like the biggest thing in the world, the brand shakeout. And I'm like, so I typically don't do, I'll do shakeouts on Fridays. I'll do shakeouts on Saturdays. On Sunday, I prefer to run my own run. And I know, I totally respect that some people can do that within a group shakeout. And maybe that's their chance to see some people they admire. But like, for instance, I really like to do strides the day before a marathon. Nothing controversial. And on a typical shakeout, people almost like get caught up in it and often forget to do strides. Or they're like, they're just like in the moment and they're not thinking like, okay, if I was to really prepare, I would, for me, I run 5K and then I like really rip some strides and then jog a little bit. And I'm like, okay, I've tuned up for tomorrow. And I think, you know, if there's like 100 people, 50 people at a shakeout, it can almost feel like self-important to be like, I'm going to go around the corner and do some strides because there's too many people here. But like we've prepared a lot. So it's important to think through, you know, how to build up to that day. I'm curious, Marcus, do you have like a way of eating, running, like this will be what number Boston for you?
This will be number three, but yeah, I mean, I can really relate to what you're saying, and just to add my own perspective and that how I've learned and changed and adapted. I think one of the challenging things about the Boston weekend is that the race is on Monday. So it's like an extended weekend. So Saturday, you're kind of like ready to go. And Sunday, you're just like, got this nervous energy. You're like, what do I do with it? And it's time of Monday, then I can see how people get burnt out. So when I first went to Boston, like I spent loads of energy and I was all in the hub Saturday, Sunday. And then also by the time Monday, you're kind of like burnt out. And I remember saying to you, Peter, when we met last year about like how I just like set my energy and try to spend my energy. So I'll do the same sort of thing. So I've got the opportunity again, like I said, to do the live podcast at the Boston Expo. And then Saturday is probably going to be my day where I'm doing all the brand stuff. Sunday, I've got a tradition. I always go to, they call the Church of the Finish Line in Boston. I'm not particularly religious, but for some reason, like it's become a tradition with me and some of my friends. We go to the 9 a.m. service. You've got everyone there in their Boston jackets. And you feel like if you're getting blessed by the big man upstairs, then it's going to be a good thing for Monday.
Yeah.
I sort of spend time with, like, I've got some friends, like, probably same to you. I last year hang out with a guy called Chip, you know, we're good mates. Got outside the city, had lunch, had a little shakeout run. And I think it was nice to sort of like get away from the craziness and to chill out and have a laugh and relax a bit and not take it too serious. And then by Monday, I felt like in a good place. So I would advise people just do everything you need to do on Saturday, relax on Sunday. And then Monday, obviously, that's your day to shine, really.
Oh, man, you're making like, I'm getting nervous. I can actually feel I'm like, oh, okay, breathe. Because yeah, I mean, Sunday is, it's long and you're like, I think we've all been in that moment where you're like, it's Sunday, it's the night before, and you're like, why do I do this? Like, oh, this is going to be awful. Like, oh, this is going to be so hard. A couple of years ago, I stayed at a buddy's house, and our other friend came over. Neither of them are racing. And, like, they started making some gin and tonics. Like, they were having some fun. And I'm just like, tomorrow's going to be really hard. and I'm like, this is the wrong mindset. Like, it is true, but you need to, like, find that. Like, again, like, finding a friend who has the right energy, finding a routine. My buddy who's run it with me many times, he's a big baseball fan. So we would often go sit in the stands at the Red Sox game. They have an afternoon game and we'd sit in the shade, and it's like, okay, that sort of noon to five time period, you need to get lunch, but you also need to not drive yourself crazy. I mean, I've had friends be like, oh, I walked all around Boston and saw all the history on Sunday, and then my legs were tired on Monday. And I was like, well, yeah, okay. I mean, sorry, that's not a good idea. So, like, avoid doing that on Sunday. But, yeah, surrounding yourself with the right people. And then the Monday morning is exhausting. I mean, if you've done New York, I don't know if it's more exhausting than the way New York, you know, you have that has, like, subways and ferries and buses. Boston, though, getting down to the starting line on Monday morning, ideally, like, the weather is nice. The new way is you drop a bag there for your gear that you're going to want after. They say don't put any, you know, possession valuables in there, and I always put my cell phone in. Like, come on, I don't know, I just want to have, like, unless someone I know I trust is meeting me right after the line, I end up putting a few dollars and my cell phone and some gear to, like, try to be comfortable after the race. And then you have to, it's like so much nervous energy, right, Marcus? Like, so many people, you're on the Boston Common, all these buses are lined up. And so it's like, there is enough time, there is enough buses, but everyone's kind of like, over there, like, shoot across the Common, there's more. And, you know, sometimes an official will be like, there's more buses down that way, take your time. I just try to tell people, like, you have a ton of time, like, settle in. There's porta potties down there. It's like, go take a moment and try to just, my first Boston, I made the great mistake of, you know, I was just hydrating. And then it's like a 45, 55 minute ride. And I'm like doubled over in pain, about to pee myself on the bus. And I'm just like, I got out to the start, like, bent over, like, in so much pain. And I found a bush, you know, it's super, it was awful. So you have to also be mindful, like, you're about to get on a school bus with a lot of other nervous runners. I got to run last year with my cousin or got to start with him. So we were able to, like, be on it's like a proper little two-seater, you know, school bus. And so we were able to have, like, calm energy. Whereas you get all these people, like, chatting and hooting and hollering, and you're like, what's going on? You guys are running a marathon soon. Like, what's going on? But, and then what'd you think of the Athlete Village last year?
I will get to that, but, like, going back to the point you mentioned about the buses, and this is a lesson I learned from the first year. Literally, like you're saying, you're going to be driving the length of a marathon to get there, and the suspension is quite hard, and you've probably hydrated quite a bit, so you're going to be busting to go. So make sure you bring, like, an empty bowl just in case.
Just in case.
You're not caught short on the bus, pro tip.
It's just so easy to get, like, oh, I got to get on this bus, like, it's a concert or something. Like, no, like, there are porta potties in the common, and I just encourage everyone, like, try to slow down a moment. Yeah.
But yeah, I think in terms of the Athlete Village, I mean, the first year I went, it was 2018, so it was like a mud bath. So everything was better since then.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I forgot that. Yeah. No, that looked horrible. I remember seeing Instagram stories from people who brought their phone to the start of, like, ice and snow at the starting line in the Athletes Village. But sorry, that touches on, I go to the start line with old trainers that I set aside, and, like, I donate at the start. So I keep my race shoes and my race socks in my bag. I've had years where there is no rain on the forecast and it still sprinkles. So you're like, well, I don't want to be starting with wet shoes. So I'll typically have my singlet, my arm sleeves, my gloves, my hat, my socks, and my shoes all in the little, like, bag that they give you. And yeah, what was it? 2019, we got poured on just waiting for the buses. And this kind Canadian man was like, do you want this extra poncho I have? So I'm like, yeah. I'm like, thank you so much. Because I had, like, a toss away hoodie of some sort, but like it was pouring rain, you know? So these are things to think about. The fluctuation between it could be a warm day or it could be a storming day is leads you to need to have like quite a few solutions for your goal is to like actually be feeling good there at 10 a.m. or even later for some people.
And do you know how what you said there, that might remind me, you can always tell who'd run Boston before and who's running it the first time. Because you literally, the guys that run it before are like all prepped, like hand warmers, like ponchos, everything wrapped up. And you've got guys are looking like the gun could just go off at any moment. You're like,
oh, yeah. Oh,
like, we've got hours. Like, what are you doing?
The singlet, like they're in the singlet and you're like, you have nothing else besides your singlet. Like, what is going on? Yeah. To me, it's almost heartbreaking because I'll be like packing my bag and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to need these gloves, but like, what if it's cold out there? Do I want to? It's also, you're coming out of the winter. You're like, I'd love to have gloves if it's actually frigid. I tell people to bring a little extra fuel, like bring an extra bar that they might not eat, but they don't want to be out there searching for food. And so this like, it's annoying because a lot of races where you can throw your bag aside right before, you can just bring everything and then you put it in the bag and set it aside. When you know you're going to have to forfeit everything you bring out there, it's like, all right, so I'll bring, I think Mike Ko Kafuzi recommended some Amazon arm sleeves that I ended up ordering and they were like quite comfortable. I'm like, man, these are really comfortable. They're like sun cover sleeves for being out in the sun and they're very inexpensive. So it's just to say like, there's, you know, sometimes that might lead me to compromise. I might not have like my finest gear at the start if I'm not sure if I'm going to use it, like some cheaper gloves, some cheaper arm sleeves, things like that.
Yeah. How's this making you feel, Matt, hearing these stories to honestly prep?
This is honestly like really helpful for me. I mean, I'm aware this is a podcast recording, but I'm actually learning how this is going to be in the days leading up. I haven't done Boston before. This year, I think I've made it pretty public that I'm not actually going all out, but even still, it doesn't really change the fact that this start information is super helpful in just knowing, you know, what we might deal with. I've done New York and I dealt with the whole, you know, get the bus at the start, and 2019, I don't really remember it super well, but I do remember it being a little bit stressful just because I hadn't done anything like that before. You know, normally it's book a hotel nearby and hopefully walk less than a mile and a half to the start. Sometimes I'm not that close. I get a metro or whatever. But in that case, it was quite a while. And so, you know, I definitely think it's important for people to at least think through how that might feel and how that might look, because you don't want your whole race to be derailed by that 2 hour, 3 hour journey to the start line that you're not ready for, you know, and that cognitive load on things not being what you think they're going to be can hurt your race. So I think, you know, those insights that you're sharing, Bronco, are super helpful for everyone listening, but also for me, because I haven't done it before. I'm excited. I'm super pumped. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys out there, to see everyone else out there as well that I know. But it's funny now living in America, because obviously I'm Australian, but when I grew up in Australia, Boston Marathon was this thing where it's like, okay, it's a major, it's great. But then now that I'm in the States and I meet everyone, it's like the big thing. It's just, it's everything to a lot of Americans. Of course, you know, not all Americans, but a lot of Americans. And when I hear Bromka speak to it on different podcasts and read your writing, it really makes me realize how special this event is. Like, it's really... And many people are, you know, it's not just Bronco. It's like quite a lot of people online are sharing that. So I'm really excited. I booked flights last week, and I'm pumped. I'm looking forward to it. And
I'm excited for you to hear about it from you, like during and after. I think,
For sure. Hopefully, Marcus invites me back on, and I can talk about it. I'm pumped. I'm looking forward to it. And I don't exactly have a plan. I'm specifically doing it as a sort of a hard, long enjoyable long run, probably around 235 to 240, but we'll see. But who knows? I might bump into you guys at the start line, but I'm sure we'll probably catch up at some point in the weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts after. And I think one thing I did really want to highlight with Boston in comparison to, say, some of the other majors, which makes it really special, is that it's very concentrated. So the whole marathon weekend can feel quite intense. So I've made a conscious decision to make sure my accommodation is outside of Boston, just outside, so I can give myself a bit of a break. Say if you're running the London Marathon, you know, you go to the Docklands, which is East London, to pick up your bib, but you couldn't tell if there's a marathon happening. and then you go to South London to start the running the race, and then you run the race, and then it's over, and then life just carries on. Whereas Boston, it's just like, as soon as you land, it's just like intense. It can be as intense as you make it, or it can be as chilled as you make it.
Yeah. So I think it's important to find the people who give you the right energy, find the events that give you the right feeling. Yeah, if you don't want to walk a ton the weekend before, but also like you're a fit, capable person. If you need to walk a mile, that's totally, I think it's like, it's keeping the stress low. It's finding the people you want to be around on the bus or on the, I mean, I'll often like introduce myself to the man next to me and just be like, oh, where are you from? And just like trying to normalize and not just be like, it's 7 a.m. I'm going to lock in for 3 hours. You know, it's like, I try to really go through my training and be like, remember that morning I got up and read the paper and had coffee, and then I went and I aced that long run. Like, this can be like that, you know, like, let's try to remember the zone you thrive in, not get sucked into someone else's energy. I've definitely gotten onto elevators and been like, wow, you could cut the tension in this elevator with a knife, and it's Sunday, like the race is tomorrow. So yeah, I encourage everyone to like think about their, when they are in their best headset and then mindset, and then go from there. Yeah, but it's fun to geek out on all these details with you guys. Yeah, I just think all these details are fun to geek out about, and like Matt said, it makes it exciting because everyone cares, and so many people care that it makes it more exciting, and it's like this virtuous cycle.
Yeah, I totally agree. Gents, a pleasure talking with you. Obviously, we've covered quite a bit of the course and the race weekend as well, and some pro tips and things to do, not to do. Looking forward to catching up with you both out there. And yeah, thank you for joining me on this episode of the podcast.
Wonderful.
Cheers, guys.
Take care.